Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Sad reality, what we've done in this country to higher ed educators. I don't even call them professors anymore because we've so badly broken higher education. But what we've done to these folks who are supposed to be teaching the next generation of highly educated folks is we've created basically highly educated, highly indebted sweatshops for workers who go into and really never get out of. They end up working for multiple universities, trying to cobble together a meager existence, let alone paying off the mountains of debt that they've been saddled with. And this is one of those moments where I'm thrilled to see finally people have said, you know, we're not doing it anymore. We're going to organize. We're going to fight. We're going to make conditions better. No more sweatshops in higher ed. And what we're seeing out in Western Pennsylvania, the University of Pittsburgh, right now there's a campaign, the campaign to organize them. The election's happening. I'm here to share some thoughts on that. I've asked Alex Press to come talk with us. Alex is a staff writer over at Jacobin Magazine. She's got a great piece out just on this titled A Huge Unionization Vote is Looming at the University of Pittsburgh. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me as ever.
So this is a big deal. This is, what is it, like 3,500 adjunct professors and educators who have said, you know what, enough with the poverty wages, enough with the desperation, we want some rights.
Yeah, so it's something around 3,500, you know, give or take a few academics, and it's all ranks, right? So, you know, I think a lot of people think of professors as tenured professors, right? You think of like the cushy professor with the, you know, oak-lined office, all these great books, sort of living the dream in a certain way. But that is the minority of faculty across the country and certainly at Pitt. It's about 70% nationwide of faculty who are teaching in higher ed are actually adjuncts. So they have no route to being tenure track, right? And so they lack those protections and they also lack pay. So at the University of Pittsburgh, for example, I've spoken with adjuncts there who get, you know, maybe $3,000, $4,000 per class, and they're only allowed to teach two classes because they can't be teaching full time. Otherwise, the university gets into problems for keeping them as adjuncts. And so exactly as you said, Rick, you know, they're cobbling together from different universities. And again, we're talking about $6,000 or $7,000 a semester. That's terrible pay. You know, people really, I think people's understanding of what it is to be a professor in this country is maybe wildly misguided. And so, yes, at the University of Pittsburgh, they're including those low paid adjuncts. They're including faculty that are tenure track or are tenured now. So it's all ranks and it's across all schools except the School of Medicine for very complicated reasons. And so it's a huge vote, and it's being organized with an institution of Pittsburgh with a great history, a big history, the United Steelworkers. And so I think, you know, again, people who listen to your show probably know this, but these days when you think about a union, you know, the UAW as auto workers, that's not really who their membership is anymore. And so the steelworkers represent a lot of academic workers in Western Pennsylvania, which is where I'm based in Pittsburgh. And so this is not that unusual for them. They also have been organizing with the graduate students at Pitt. And so, yeah, as you said, this campaign has been going on for years, and currently they're doing mail-in balloting. So those ballots went out at the end of last month and they're due early October.
And we should get the results, you know, sometime in the middle of October. But, you know, as you pointed out, you know, like 70% are adjuncts. And you think of the University of Pittsburgh, which is a credible university. I mean, one of our esteemed universities in this country, you know, not some fly-by-night online place that advertises at 3 a.m. of how you can get a degree in 18 months. This is a legitimate, long-standing, reputable university who is abusing their workforce. And I would argue, if you don't have tenured track professors, if you don't have people who are part of the institution, I got to think that the education that you're paying for and that you're getting suffers.
Right. I mean, the phrase among many educators, whether it's public schools or higher education, is that the teacher's working conditions is the student's learning conditions, right? And it's totally true. I mean, it's common sense. If your professor is struggling to get by on their income, if she is leaving the class, you know, the minute that it's over to commute on the train or the subway or the bus to another university and then maybe to another job after that, you're just not going to be able to get that much attention from that person, right? It's not their fault, but they absolutely don't have the conditions that make for this ideal that you're paying a lot of money, right, to get that actual kind of incredible benefit that is being educated in a college setting. But these faculty can't do that, right? Because they're scrambling to get by. And the university, for its part, you know, you would think this would be almost in its interest to have, you know, not have these problems, you know, not have people who are completely unable to do, you know, right by their students. But instead, the university has fought this tooth and nail for years, hiring a union-busting law firm and stalling the process at the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board for a long time by submitting inaccurate lists of who works there, that included dead people, for example, people long retired. So they have just been trying to slow this process down. And despite all their efforts, it's finally going forward.
Yeah, you know, and I look at this, and this is not new. You know, this adjunct thing is something we've been talking about for years. And, you know, out in Western Pennsylvania, and the story always pops into my head whenever we talk about adjuncts. There was a woman, 83 years old, Vijoko, I think her name was, worked for Duquesne University. She was an adjunct for like 25 years. She couldn't get health insurance. Basically died with unpaid, basically homeless because she couldn't get health insurance. She got no stability from her workplace, but worked for that university for decades.
Right. I mean, there's just no care at all. And people at Pitt have told me, for example, you know, one of the issues they have is that the adjuncts are hired semester by semester, or sometimes year by year, right? So if you have, say, a tenured professor who's leading research in public health, and she has a 3-year contract for a research grant, the people she's collaborating with, her coworkers, other professors, might be hired year by year. So she has no idea if she's gonna be able to keep doing this research the next year. And similarly, I mean, these adjuncts, there are adjuncts who've taught there for 20 years and still are hired on that incredibly short-term contract. So they have no stability, right? What if the university, for whatever reason it wants, decides not to give you the next semester's worth of work? All of a sudden you maybe have raised an entire family in Pittsburgh. You've been there 20 years, right? And all of a sudden you're just out of work and there's nowhere else to go. So it's incredibly unstable for everyone involved. And of course the university is very hierarchical. It's very hard to get your issues addressed by anyone. You go to your department head, they have to go to their vice dean and on and on. And so a union actually makes that much more transparent and says, hey, here are some very practical problems. And so it seems very clear cut as far as why this makes sense. And certainly a lot of faculty across the country have agreed. There have been like 100 and something new bargaining units across the country in higher ed over the past 5 or 6 years. And so this one's a big one, but it's certainly, you know, part of a trend where faculty are seeing the writing on the wall and they're saying it's either going to get worse or we're going to do something about it.
No, and this is where I think the country's at in this moment. I mean, we just saw the recent polling coming out. Union approval ratings are at the highest they've been in, you know, in 50 or 60 years. People are tired of, you know, working long hours for poverty wages. There's a want in this moment, and labor, for at least my view, is joining and forming unions is the way forward. It's the way to solve our inequality problems. It's the way to solve the kind of insecurity problems that we're seeing at Pitt and at other universities across the country. So I'm very hopeful for these workers that they come forth and win this vote. But as I understand, and I think you alluded to it a moment ago, the university is doing all of the union busting things that you would expect. They hired one of the biggest union busting firms in the state of Pennsylvania, Ballard Spa. They're doing everything they can do to take on the enemy, which is their workers.
Right. Yeah. So Ballard Spa has been leading these negotiations. So Pitt is a public institution. So this election doesn't happen through the NLRB, which maybe your listeners are more familiar with, but the State Labor Relations Board. And so that's where this sparring has been going on, where the university first files this list that is so much bigger than what the union, what the workers thought was their level of colleagues. It's so much bigger that actually they wouldn't have met the threshold for how many percentage of the workforce you need to have signed union cards to go forward with an election. And so they're very suspicious of this. They're like, you know, we did our due diligence. We're professors, after all, we know how to do research. And so something's up. And in fact, yes, it turns out that they included some undergrads in that list, some dead people, some people who've long retired, some people that clearly are management. And so it goes back again to the board, and it ends up taking a couple years to get to this moment. But the university is very clear on this, just as they were with the grad students, that this is not what they want. And this is part of university sort of rhetoric, right? They talk a lot about, you know, this is a free and open place. This is sort of this relic in our incredibly marketized society, right? Our precarious society. You still have freedoms here at the university. But in fact, those systems that they have in place that aren't unions are incredibly weak. So at Pitt, for example, you know, as with many universities, they talk about faculty self-governance, this idea that the faculty senate comes together and deliberates and sort of makes recommendations. But in fact, you know, I've spoken to adjuncts who said, yeah, we've been asking the faculty senate for years to give us better pay to ensure we have job stability, and nothing at all happens. And so clearly they've come to the conclusion that I think both of us hold, which is actually you need power in writing. And that's what a union is, right? You actually need to have a say at the table.
Yeah, without question. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Alex Press. Alex has got a new piece out on the University of Pitt election that's going on here with the Pennsylvania Labor Board. It's titled, A Huge Unionization Vote is Looming at the University of Pittsburgh, over at Jacobin Magazine. We'll make sure we get links out so folks can take a look at that. But, you know, I look at this, and again, it's a divide and conquer kind of situation. You've got the tenured faculty that they're okay, but there's only a handful of them really left, and they're clawing to hold on. While you've got all of these other people who are being exploited. And this is one of those moments where I go, if you're one of the tenured faculty folks, I think you want the adjuncts to have better benefits, better pay, the kind of things that you have, so that you're not alone in the shark tank. Or am I off base here?
Yeah, I mean, academia has a lot of stereotypes that are inaccurate, right? Of course, this sort of cartoonish idea of the extremely well-off tenured professor. But that said, I mean, it is a very hierarchical place, and it's certainly true that there are faculty that kind of, you know, they have what they want and that's theirs, right? Hopefully, we'll see with the vote. I mean, it's too early to say, but I've spoken to tenured faculty at Pitt who are on board with the union for exactly the reason you say. I think it's also worth mentioning for people who are listening, and I don't really go into this too much in the article, but there are efforts at the legislative level right now as well to actually mandate that any university or college that's receiving federal money have a mandate in place where 75% of the faculty have to be tenure track. So that would be massively changing the game, right? And I think it's an interesting illustration of how unions relate to that sort of legislative change, because it's been pushed by a bunch of higher ed unions, right? So Rutgers has a massive faculty union that's particularly sort of ahead of the average as far as thinking big and pushing for big changes. And they have kind of spearheaded that effort. And so it's currently being negotiated. Obviously, I would imagine it'll be negotiated down, because 75% tenure track would be so different than the current, which is, again, about one quarter to one third of faculty are on that track. But that said, you know, it's this interesting relation where a union like Pitt would sort of, you know, you form your union, also you can advocate for things like that, so you don't have to keep fighting every contract for something like that.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, if I'm Pitt, I think I want to have people who are attached to the university. I don't think I want someone teaching a class for the University of Pittsburgh and the University of Phoenix online, or one of these other for-profit colleges where the degrees are not the same, no matter what anyone says. I just think there's something different about someone like the University of Pitt, our esteemed universities across the country. I just see it as I think you want something better. I could be wrong, but that's where I'm at.
Sure. I mean, I wish that you were in charge of the business of running the University of Pittsburgh, because clearly the administrators don't agree. But I totally think you're right, that there's every reason that the community, that other faculty, and that the students themselves, their parents, should all be on board with this, because it does improve the university. It improves your teaching. It improves, you know, you want workers to stay there. You want them to be invested.
Now, we're at an interesting time. I mean, I had hoped we'd be in this moment back in 2010. I was hoping that labor would finally wake up and working people would say, hey, I've had enough of this. We want better wages, hours, conditions. But we're seeing a lot of organizing going on here. This is a huge thing. We're seeing it all across the country. We're seeing more workers going on strike than at any point that I can remember in my lifetime. And in fact, the John Deere workers, I guess, voted overwhelmingly, like 99%, to authorize a strike on Sunday. That could be a big strike. We're seeing others possibly going on. This is an important moment, I think.
Yeah, it's an important moment. And it's great. I write about labor for a living. I can't keep up with it anymore, which is not something that I could say even a couple years ago. You know, it's a comically and depressingly small world, it sometimes feels like. But now it doesn't feel that way, right? You can't keep track of the strike votes and the organizing votes. The Nabisco strike is still going on. Despite a lack of, you know, discussion on, say, television about it, there are still thousands of workers on strike across the country at Nabisco, which is a massive corporation. And as you mentioned, John Deere, that would be in Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas, some 10,000 UAW members who, yeah, have overwhelmingly, with about 99%, voted in favor of authorizing a strike, should it come to that. And part of that, again, is that the company is proposing concessions, even as it makes bigger profits, right? So there's this interesting disjuncture. This was true with Nabisco as well, where these companies are making huge profits. It's not like they, I mean, not that it would even excuse it if they were in tough times to make the workers sacrifice, but these are companies that just, you know, are having paydays, and yet they haven't changed their understanding of where their workers are at. They think they can still push for concessions like worse health insurance with higher premiums, closing plants, you know, threatening to close plants, paying less in overtime premiums. But the workers are realizing where they are, right? They have more leverage in this moment. And that's why you're seeing all of these strikes. You're seeing people say, if there ever was a time to stop accepting these concessions, stop having our lives get worse, if we're not taking it now, we never will. And yep. So I think a lot of people are putting things on the line,
especially after coming out of this pandemic and you know, the realization that, and I think a lot of people that I've talked to realize that there are no benevolent corporations, that they're a negative on the balance sheet, and how easily they're able to be discarded. And I think people are now saying, no, I got to start looking out for my interest and that of my family. And it's about time. It's about time we see more of these actions go on. If we're going to close the inequality gap, this is where it's going to be. And I think it's important. Also, I understand there's the potential of striking carpenters soon.
Yeah, I believe that this week, actually, 11,000 carpenters in Washington state are set to strike. So unless something changes last minute, which sometimes does happen, that would be the biggest strike since 2019 when the Chicago Teachers Union went on strike. And I think it would be the largest strike in the building trades in some like 8 or 9 years. So it's definitely something people should pay attention to. It's, if it happens, it'll be one of those things that you'll be like, how did I not hear about it? So you're hearing about it right now. Again, people can't even keep up with all of this action that's happening at the workplace. But those are some highlights of what's going on right now.
And this is one of those moments where I always say, if you don't have a union in your workplace, we can help you get one. Because this is, you know, because I've had a bunch of people here recently tell me, well, the company's giving me this raise and they're giving us this and they're really nice to us right now. I go, no. Let's get that in writing so that they don't claw it back in a year from now.
Exactly. Yeah.
To me, it is that simple. But Alex, I appreciate the time that you've taken. I really appreciate the work you do. You do fabulous stuff. I hope folks will take a look at the piece over at Jacobin. We'll get links out. But thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Rick. Good talking to you.
Good stuff. Alex Press. Make sure you check out her piece on the election. A huge unionization vote is looming at the University of Pittsburgh. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.